Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
All right, welcome back. So, you know, we have had, of course, in the news and on this program as well, we've talked about a lot of different subjects. And if you watch the news, you read the paper, a lot of talk about politics, healthcare, global situations, military action, geopolitical conflict, debt, inflation. Did I mention taxes? All that stuff. But something that hasn't been talked about as much lately, because it's been a little bit of on the quiet side, but should not be overlooked, and it's something that we need to definitely touch base on, and that is oil. There's only so much of it, right? Unless we discover a big balloon full of it somewhere we can go get from somewhere else and bring to our planet. There's only so much we have here. Well, I've got a gentleman on the line with me who's going to help us understand a little bit about oil and where we're headed with that. His name is Sean Hyman. He's a trader and editor of the Ultimate Wealth Report. And the website, if you'd like to take a look at what Sean does and his report that he produces, the website is ultimatewealthreport.com. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
It's my pleasure to have you. I know you're a busy guy. And tell me, before we dive into our subject, I'm curious, tell me about the report. How often do you update? What kind of report is produced? How do people, you tell us a little bit about what people can get by visiting the site and knowing more about what you do.
Yeah, at ultimatewealthreport.com, I produce a monthly report that goes out to people either via mail or email, whichever the way they prefer to receive it.
Okay.
And it's a 12-page newsletter where I give stock recommendations and I talk about what's happening with stocks, commodities, the economy, et cetera, and how to profit from it, which way to position your portfolio to benefit from inflation, dollar devaluation, money printing, et cetera. And also I have weekly accompanying videos that come with that where I shoot my screenshot and they can see the charts of our stocks, and I talk them through each week where I think that they'll go and why and things of that sort. So we'll tend to hold stocks at least 12 to 18 months or more, but I'll kind of do a hand-holding period where each week I talk about the portfolio.
That's very good. That's the kind of stuff that people need to be listening to and understanding better, and I appreciate your doing that. And so we'll direct people to ultimatewealthreport.com to get more information. Now, because you're watching it like you are, Sean, I want to, and I know we can talk about a lot of subjects. You mentioned some of them in your description, but one of the ones that, as I mentioned, as a kind of a setup for our conversation today is oil. And one of the things that I know that you have commented on, because I've read some of your material, is the days of cheap oil are gone. And before we dive into that, some might say, what do you mean? It's already expensive. But where do you think we're headed? Do you think it's going to get a lot more expensive? Have we been spoiled, if you were? Or is it going to get a lot more costly?
Well, you know, it's funny, if you listen to a lot of the financial media, they keep touting that we're going back to $75 per barrel oil, and it just doesn't happen barring an economic collapse, and that's the only thing that takes it down there, and then we go right back up as soon as the global economy recovers. And so I think that is you know, proof positive that we will have higher oil, and even as much shale oil as they claim that they're drilling and digging up, I mean, it's still, you know, oil remains stubbornly above $100 a barrel. So I don't believe we're going to see $75 a barrel barring a global collapse, you know, like we saw in 2007 or 2008. And the reason why that is many, really. For instance, the global population keeps growing and at a fast clip. I mean, it took us 123 years to get to 1 billion people on the planet, but now every 12 years we add another billion people on the planet. So that adds up very
quickly. That's a lot.
It is a lot
of people.
And they keep doing better. And so they're getting off the backs of, you know, horses and donkeys and things like that. They're getting into cars and trucks and motorcycles. And so it's adding to this, you know, is more and more pressure and demand placed upon the limited finite supplies of oil in the world. And that's one of the big underlying reasons.
You make a very good observation, Sean, about, you know, it takes a economic meltdown or economic recession in a significant way to cut back the price of oil meaningfully or in a significant way. You know, before we had our significant recession and the market dropping 38% in 2008 and all those ugly things, housing market, all that bad stuff that most people would like to forget, oil had gotten to about $150 a barrel?
Yeah, it got to about $148 or $150 and then dropped down into the 30s, you know, from basically a total economic collapse, not only in the U.S., but even globally.
So that's what can really yank it down. But you, from what I'm hearing you think we're, again, because there's only so much, and the fracking, which again is being heralded as a way to get to stuff, you're sideways drilling, you're breaking up rock, they're doing the shale oil and the, you know, all these sands, but there's only so much. And so what kind of timetable do you think we have with oil? I mean, are we talking 5 to 10 years? Again, you've got another billion people after 12 years or so. What kind of upward pressure do you think we could see?
You know, it's hard to say for sure. I think we've got enough oil supply to bridge the gap to make it to where we get onto something else other than oil eventually over time. And by the way, I don't think that day's coming soon. I don't think we're going over to, you know, electric or solar or natural gas or whatever very quickly at all, not nearly as quickly as the media would like for you to think. So we're going to need, you know, oil for quite some time, and so it's going to be in huge demand for minimally the next 5 to 10 years, minimally.
Why, and I know this may be a naive question, I think I might have suspicions of why this is the case, but naive nonetheless, why can't we get over more fully to natural gas? I mean, there are vehicles on the road that run on natural gas, and from what I've read in the, you know, the journals and papers, we are the OPEC of natural gas underneath the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah, we are, and natural gas is the really only real viable alternative to oil, in my opinion, that's out there right now. But the problem is the focus is not there, so there's not the wherewithal for the government want to help aid that process along. Right now, it's an infatuation with electric cars, Tesla, you know, clean energy, so forth. The problem with that is that let's say you got most of the U.S. alone, not just the rest of the world, but just the U.S. alone, on electric cars. What's going to happen is that the per kilowatt hour is going to go through the roof because of the new added demand, and so electricity is not going to be cheap anymore. Mm. And on top of that, our power grids couldn't handle it. There'd be blackouts and brownouts and things of that sort. So there would need to be big infrastructure rebuilding to even make that viable for the majority of America to be on that. So it's just not feasible. And the other thing is that, you know, natural gas is the best alternative, but they're going to need government subsidies at first to convert over gas engines to natural gas engines in order to get a lot of corporate America to do it, such as big rig, you know, companies that carry 18-wheeler loads over the road, mm-hmm. cross country and things of that sort. That's really where you need to start it, and those guys are going to want governmental incentives to make those conversions. But that's where you would start racking up a bunch of savings over time and really tip the scales towards natural gas and away from oil and gasoline as we know it.
Excellent. Excellent point. Sean Hyman's our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. He's a trader and editor of Ultimate Wealth Report, ultimatewealthreport.com. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
And we are back with Sean Hyman, and he is the editor of Ultimate Wealth Report, and that's the website by the same name, ultimatewealthreport.com, helping us have a little bit better perspective on oil and alternatives. And I don't know if this information's out there readily available, or and I don't want to put you on the spot with this, Sean. I've always kind of wondered this, and maybe I'll do a little research and bring it back for another program. But if you know, I'd be curious, is there any way to kind of translate what it would cost if we had the infrastructure, if there was the ramping up and getting things converted over to natural gas, what would it cost me to quote unquote, convert it versus gas? Like if I fill up I have an SUV. Yes, I am guilty. I'm driving one of those big trucks, but I fill it up. I know what that's going to cost me. It's got a 28 gallon tank and it's going to, you know, take me 400 miles basically. And I know what that cost was. That cost about $80. How much would it cost me to fill up with quote-unquote natural gas to do the same thing? Do you have any idea, kind of a conversion?
I've heard the conversion ratio before, and I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think it was like a third to a half of the expense.
So that's a significant difference.
Yeah, I mean, if people could cut their gasoline bill in half, that would be enormous. And money that could go elsewhere in our economy to stimulate.
And, you know, you mentioned something before the break that I want to come back to about the whole fascination with electric. And you mentioned, you know, the ability of our grid and our system to handle it. The other thing that people overlook is one of the ways we get electricity is we burn oil to get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and coal and all the other stuff that they don't like out there. You know, absolutely. It's so true.
Well, the other thing I was going to ask you about is why there might be resistance, and I don't like to be conspiratorial or too paranoid here, but we can't overlook the impact or the inertia of big oil companies who have a very vested interest in our staying on the oil bottle. You know.
Yep, they do. They've got some of the deepest pockets. I mean, if you look at the market caps of these companies, they're some of the largest companies in the world with some of the biggest hoards of cash in the world. And that's hard to overcome because they've got their lobbyists, they've got their groups that they're part of, their big contributors to political parties, and so forth. And so that helps keep them at the top. And it's going to take a lot to shake that. And even once it does, it probably won't until you see a lot of these guys take some of their oil profits and pour it into something like owning more natural gas or something of that sort. And some of these companies are actually starting to do that already. And that's why I think that natural gas could be a great alternative. So I'm not seeing them buying up anything concerning electricity, but I am seeing them starting to shift some of their money over to natural gas. So I do think that is, you know, a wave of tomorrow, but it's still going to be minimally 5 or 10 years out.
So we might see them come out and say we were for natural gas before we were against it.
Yeah. Once they get switched over and can profit from it, then they will be very much for it. Absolutely.
Full steam ahead. You know, I would like you to clear something up for us too that I've been wanting to address on my program, Sean, and that is there's often two different quotes that are used in the market and on Wall Street about oil. You've got the Texas and the Brent. Can you describe those two? They're different, right? They're two different quotes for the oil.
Yeah, they're different kinds of oil. One sweet, one sour, and one is used by Brent is used by a lot of the rest of the world, predominantly WTI, West Texas Intermediate crude, is used largely by most of the U.S. There's a little bit of Brent used on the coast, but not much. And so Brent is really WTI is what we watch here in the U.S. as the standard, but really the bigger impact globally really is to watch Brent crude prices and to see what's going on there. But both Brent and WTI have both had this, you know, stubbornly upward trajectory, and they both had the same pattern. They just have slightly different pricing is all.
Yeah, usually, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, it's usually about $10 difference per barrel?
Yep, roughly. Typically, it's right now it's about $5, but
okay.
$5 to $10.
Okay. I mean, just and so when you, for our listeners, when they see these quotes, the one that we refer to often on this program and is in the papers is the West Texas Intermediary. That's the correct term?
Yeah, West Texas Intermediate.
Intermediate. Okay.
Yep.
There's going to be a quiz later. All right. Very good. If you're just joining us, Sean Hyman's our guest. He is editor of the Ultimate Wealth Report, ultimatewealthreport.com. Another quick break. We'll be right back.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Welcome back. We have Sean Hyman on the line with us, editor of Ultimate Wealth Report, ultimatewealthreport.com. So, all right, we cleared that up, Sean. Thank you on the oil. And so you mentioned one was the West Texas Intermediate. Is that the quote-unquote sweeter one? Is that the better quality oil?
I believe it's the sweet and the other is the sour, I believe. So ours is easier to refine and deal with, basically, than Brent.
Okay. Ironically, the Brent tends to be higher in cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's interesting that it's not the same quality and also more expensive.
Yep. Yeah, it runs about 106 per barrel right now, and we're at about 101 per barrel here in WTI.
Okay, interesting. Interesting. I've got so many things I want to ask you, Sean. Let's talk again about the some of the upward pressure on oil prices. One of the things I've read that you've written about is about because of OPEC, and you know they set their production, they set their prices, or they set the production which drives prices, but they have in mind a certain price they need, because a lot of these nation states are very, very dependent on their oil revenues for their budgets, and those budgets probably aren't getting smaller.
Right, absolutely. What they do is they figure out what they need their governmental budgets to be, and they get that number, and then they find out what they need crude to be at per barrel in order to meet that budget, because most of the revenues out there in the deserts, of course, come from oil revenue. And so so they influence oil in the direction they need it to meet their budgets. And as you can imagine, like you've said, they've had to expand their budgets. Why? Well, these are dictators that have been in power for 20, 30 plus years, and they want to remain in power. And in order to do that, they're going to have the people calm and not rioting. Well, when the people feel like there's not hardly many services being offered to them, or that costs are too high for food or fuel, the government has to go in there and subsidize those to bring those down to where the common man over there can purchase those. And the common man there, man, sometimes is living off a buck or two or three a day. So you talk about an income and wealth gap, you know, I mean, these guys have the biggest extreme that's just about out there. And so so they have to add more money to their budgets, because they basically kind of got to pay off the people, so to speak, in order to keep these riots down and to not risk being thrown out of power like has happened with some in recent years. So as those budgets balloon, and they're going to continue to balloon, OPEC needs a higher and higher average price per barrel of oil, and they will get it if they've got to slow down oil production to increase the price of oil, or whatever they got to do, they're going to do it.
Yeah, they can calibrate that pricing, and they know very well what price and demand, the interrelationship there, to dial in and maximize their profits.
Yep, and the scary thing is that used to, of course, they needed $70 or $80 per barrel oil. Then it went to $90. Now it's getting to where it's $100, $110 that they're starting to reach that they need for break evens. And I've seen projections in the next few years of $150. And if you go out about another 10 years or so, it goes, some estimates are as high as $300 per barrel, if you can believe it. It's crazy. So, prices will overall head higher, not lower. Now, there will be things that cause many economic crashes along the way, because, of course, high oil also eventually puts a weight on an economy, like ankle weights on a runner, and will temporarily drag it down and cause some havoc there. And we saw an extremity of that back in 2008. But notice how it used to, $40 used to be the ceiling for oil, and now even in economic collapse, it's pretty much the floor when just the worst-case scenario in the world that you can dream up happens. And then it almost quickly starts going back from there all the way back to comfortably above $100 a barrel again.
Well, so it's a real potential trend. Let's do this. We'll grab it one more quick break, and we come back, Sean and I will talk about what you can do to prepare yourself. That's where we are now. So let's do that and come right back.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we are back. Sean Hyman's on the line with me on the phone talking to me about oil and other energy issues. And Sean's editor of Ultimate Wealth Report, ultimatewealthreport.com. So I kind of teed it up nicely before the break for Sean to talk about what to do, you know, if there is this ongoing upward pressure and if we can't get other things online quickly enough to, you know, to diversify our energy resources or make that transition in a way that it works. What are our hedges to, you know, to kind of hedge the rise of oil prices? Do we look at making oil stocks part of our portfolio, or what do we do?
Yeah, absolutely. It's positioning yourself on the right side of the fuel inflation game. So if you're strictly a consumer, strictly going to the gas pump, pumping gas in, you're on the wrong side of the inflation fuel inflation game. Of course, everybody's still going to have to fill up their cars, so what do? You get on the right side by owning oil companies, the ones that actually profit from higher oil prices. So as oil prices go up and they're pumping in out of the ground for somewhat of a fixed cost, their profit margins widen, their earnings expand, and their stock prices go up. So if you own these oil companies, then as fuel inflation goes higher, as gas goes higher at the pump, you're going to do better in your portfolio by owning some of these companies. And I can discuss some of the some specific names if you want me to go into specifics.
I would love to hear a couple of, because, you know, I know which ones are in the portfolios and which ones the mutual funds, you know, all seem to be buying, but I'd be curious on a couple specific ones that you think might be worth taking a look at.
Yeah, the ones that I like that are huge, that have deep pockets, that have, you know, low price stocks relative to their earnings and have rich dividend yields are companies like BP, which is also symbol BP. ENI, which is symbol E, and Total, which is symbol TOT. A lot of those have about 4.5% to 5% dividend yields, so that right there goes a long ways towards helping fight overall inflation and erosion of purchasing power.
Good.
And they're some of the cheapest places you can actually buy stocks in the market relative to their earnings right now. And then as fuel prices go up and oil prices go up, you're going to be the beneficiary of that. So a lot of companies will get hurt with higher oil prices as it squeezes their profits, but actually the profits of these companies can actually expand, much less, you know, retain their profits, and that's going to be good for their stock prices, and so the owners of those stocks are going to do great.
That's a very helpful information, Sean. And, you know, I was going to ask too, and you may or may not have this off the top of your head, but, you know, you're a good resource, so I'm opening up my questions I have for myself. Refiners. It always seems to be that the refineries all want to shut down in the summer when the peak usage comes. I always find that a mystery. Or if gas prices fall, all of a sudden, it's time to clean up and fix one of our refineries. And we only have so many refineries. What do you think kind of going out is going to be with refineries? And also a related question, who owns them? Are they owned by the oil companies? Are they things that we should consider buying as an individual stock? What do you think?
Yeah, they're largely owned by the oil companies.
Okay.
So most of the oil companies own most of the gas stations. And so by buying those, you're really getting both out there. And the reason why they do that is because when they run a different type of fuel in the warmer weather than they do in the cooler weather, and they have to change that mixture. And I'm not a pro on that. I just know they have to. And so they have to ramp down production, change some stuff out, change some stuff over, and then ramp back up production with the new mixtures that do well with the cooler weather. And so that's why they have to do that. But one of the other problems that we have, and another reason why you're probably not likely to see lower gasoline, is that I don't care how much oil we have, and you know that I believe it's finite, but we are building more refineries than we have hardly in the last 30 years. And so even if you had the oil, you still got to get it refined, and we can't get it refined at a fast enough rate to bring the supply up, to bring the price down. And so it's another reason why we're not going to see, you know, drastically lower prices at the pump.
That's a reality check. We haven't building refineries in quite some time. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when you're lagging behind 30 years of building refineries, it's hard to get back in front of the ball, you know, and ahead of the curb. And so it's going to take them a long time to do it, and there's not the wherewithal hardly to do it unless gas prices get so insane that it's like a public outrage, and then the government has the incentive to want to go ahead and try to encourage that along.
Well, the other thing that always seems to happen, Sean, is whenever gas prices do go down, it seems like that's when they slip in extra taxes, government, city, state, whatever, and then we don't notice it that much until all of a sudden gas prices start going back up. You're like, wait a minute, that's jumping up fast.
Yep, that's true. And then also, as oil prices start slumping, gas prices don't come down near as fast either. So, you know, they make more money that way by trailing the decline by quite a, you know, not at the same pace, in other words.
Yeah, I hear you. Sean Heim has been our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, editor of Ultimate Wealth Report, ultimatewealthreport.com. Sean, thank you so much. We'll have you back another time.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate
All right,
it.
You're welcome.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.